Saturday with Conamo Mungon on RTE Radio 1.
Hello again. We're going to look now at some of the issues that continue to affect rural Ireland, particularly towns and villages along the western seaboard, where, for the most part, populations continue to decline. Earlier this week, I travelled to Ballycastle in North County Mayo, and there I met a number of people at the Caja Coast Eco Campus. It's based in the old Stella Maris Secondary School in the town, which closed 25 years ago. The Eco Campus is an initiative set up by locals to try and bring employment and some vibrancy back to the small town, which does benefit from tourism in the area, but which has been losing its young people for decades. The story begins with Noel Kelly.
Looking at Ballycastle, say a village that was vibrant probably, and you know, it was way more vibrant in the 1920s than it is even now. And we saw the demise of it from the 80s onwards. There were 11 pubs in the 80s, down to two now. The class sizes, when myself and Ray were in school, in the National School in Ballycastle, the class sizes were in their late 20s. The class sizes now, some of the class sizes in Ballycastle are down to 3 and 4. You need 5 parishes, so Ballycastle, Killala, Kilfine, Cuneel, and Lacken to come together to form the Naoimh Pádraig underage football teams. We have the product here. We've, two, as you said, they're the two big attractors for North Mayo of the Caja Fields and Downpatrick Head. The scenery all along the way to Balmullet from Ballina is stunning. And, as someone said to me once, when I worked in the Caja Fields as a tour guide, you can't eat the scenery, you know. We formed the Caja Coast Community CLG, a bunch of us that were, say, had moved home, or people that were working and living in the area. A lot of people with maybe third level education in their pockets.
Noel, can we go upstairs, maybe meet a few of the people that are basing themselves up here for the purposes of work? Hi, lads. How's it going?
Over here.
Corey Madden. How are you doing?
Good to meet you. Colm O'Mungon.
Our main office is based in Dublin. So I'm from Ballycastle myself. So I found, since we've set up the base here, I can operate a good part of the year from here as well, which is great. A lot of the guys that work for us are from Ballycastle also. There's other companies and other guys we know around the place that are in the same boat. You know, there's other guys we're talking to that are based in the UK with Ballycastle connections, even as far away as Australia, that are looking to spend, maybe 30-40% of their time here and have a base here.
And what do you think would be stopping them from ultimately making that decision, spending more time here, investing and trying to apportion some of their business activity here?
Housing, obviously. We'd be aware, and the guys would be aware, there's people we'd be in touch with that are looking to base themselves here in Ballycastle and just can't get either a house to lease, they can't get a site to buy, they can't get an old house to buy to renovate. It's hard to believe, but they're just not there to be got, you know. That's somewhere definitely where the government could maybe give us a bit more help. I know housing is an issue nationally, but we've definitely seen it here, you know.
My name is Shane Healy. When the guys came to us with an opportunity to take office space in Ballycastle and their idea about creating an eco hub, it fitted exactly what we wanted to do. So we run our commercial operations from Ballycastle now. It gives us an opportunity to employ local people. Engineers, project managers who would have been typically working in Dublin and England, and give them an opportunity to come back and work and live in the locality and in the West of Ireland. I think since COVID, the attitude has changed to working from home, remote working. We need to attract the right talent, and you need to be able to offer that in order to get the people that you want.
What was this? Was it a classroom? This wasn't the principal's office or anything, was it? Were you in school in this building yourself?
No, I'm a lot younger than these fellas, so I missed out on that.
Right, but you're back in Ballycastle after how long away?
I left in 2010, so I was just graduated from Galway. So I did a master's in Irish history there, and like a lot of people, had to leave. Like, in terms of London, you know, you're fighting your way onto the tube. It's 45 minutes, squeeze in like a sardine. While here, you'd walk here in 5-10 minutes. And after work, come down to the beach, bring the dog out, bring our little fella out. You can't compare. The best thing that's happened to us as a village, it's crazy, is probably COVID, because it's made people realise that remote working can be done here. Like, if you told me 5-6 years ago I'd be working from here, I just wouldn't have believed you.
And for anyone in your situation who's coming back, what are the challenges for coming back? Because you're obviously happy to be here, but it may not have happened overnight. So maybe walk us through a little bit of that.
The biggest problem, I suppose, here is just access to housing. And we were very lucky. We found somewhere to rent. The plan is to build, but obviously, you know, particularly in these rural areas, that's difficult. And the planning process is not the easiest. So that's one thing I think, when you, especially, you know, people that are hopefully coming back to contribute to communities like this, that there should be a bit of leeway in terms of planning.
From the Saturday program, RTE.
Hi, nice to meet you.
How you doing? You're lovely welcome. To meet you. Yeah. Tell us about the shop and post office here.
Okay, well, we had nothing to start with. The post office was gone, and then the Eco Campus very kindly suggested, well, put this place forward, which was an old classroom, and facilitated me putting in Ballycastle Post Office. That was about 2 years ago. The original post office in Ballycastle, the postmistress, she retired. So Ballycastle then were without a post office for approximately 3 months. How it affected people was, like, our pensioners without transport would have to get away to be transported into Killala to use the facilities and then back out again, of course. But with what we have here is, on a Friday, it's almost like a community centre vibe where they'll stop and have a coffee and they're having chats and everybody's catching up there. And then we have payments every day of the week. We've also had all the residents in Berks who they would have had to have transport to wherever to collect payments. So
For anyone who doesn't know about that, who are the residents in Berks?
Okay, so the refugees from all the various countries, they moved into Berks literally the week before we opened here. So that too has been lovely that they've been able to, and it's been a great way of everybody getting to know each other within the community, because when they come in, we know the names, they know us now, they know all the girls in here. It's familiarity, they're getting to know the locals, and 2 years on, it's just everybody knows each other, so it was a huge success.
Overnight, the population of Ballycastle Village increased by over a third, with about 120 people coming in from all over the world into seeking refuge in Ireland. And there were no fires, there were no mass protests, there was no banging of doors or drums. It just happened, and that was the case. And those people, in general, and in fairness to them, have tried to integrate where they can. The numbers of young kids in that centre have actually saved a number of teachers in the school. I know it's hard work for the teachers trying to work with 15 different languages every day, but they're doing their best there. Same as the Kiddies' Corner school here as well. I know, like, that the pressure on local resources happened overnight as well. What's needed is a support in relation to those, to helping those services. So this is the gardening group up here. We're going to get you to talk to some of those guys.
How are you doing? Are you well?
Hi.
Ball of year and upper. That's.
We have a great upper here.
Yeah.
This is from Mongan.
Have you been in the garden next door? Okay.
Sure, bring us in.
So we started the garden, I suppose, 2 years ago.
Tough going, or?
Very tough going. Very tough going. But we persevered. There's about 12 of us now, and it was just all overgrown when we started, and we just kept pushing and pushing for funding and different things, and it all came together. And of course, all the elections last year helped, because all the councillors were very, very grateful and very helpful.
You need that. You need that interaction. You need people coming in, and there should be an awful lot more money put into rural Ireland.
You know, there was a time you wouldn't see any cars here, even along the street, after the secondary school closed.
Yes, we're very proud of our little village, even though, you have to fight for it. And I think it's the same for a lot of rural Ireland.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
And how would you say, I mean, for a young couple who, say, you know, wanted to get planning permission nearby if their family had a bit of land?
Did anybody? You'll get it for a wind farm. A planning permission, probably, but you won't get it for a one-off housing for some local youngster coming back wanting to build his own place.
Is it an issue?
Very big, very big.
Walking around the campus, talking to, whether it was, you know, the women in the garden or anybody, or the lads working upstairs, housing keeps coming up. From your own observations, how much of an issue is that?
Yeah, it is still a very big issue. As I said, we were labelled around here as a high scenic value landscape, and it's been very difficult for years to get planning permission. So much so that a lot of people who had tried and failed, like, left here. So, you know, a family of a mother, father and two kids is a massively precious resource to an area like Ballycastle. The planning permission process, we'll say, has got to be made a bit easier. We're not saying bad planning, but we're saying fair planning. If you are going to give planning permission for a 185-metre high turbine, and in the same breath say to some family that your little three-bed cottage is going to impact the visual amenity of an area as compared to the turbine blade, then that's not fair. For rural Ireland to survive, there is no Superman coming. It's the communities themselves have got to do it for themselves. That's hard, and you know, it is a volunteer system, but we'd ask, like, if politicians are going to be talking to you in a while, is that they would put together a framework that where people can go to and know exactly what's out there to be tapped into.
All right. And so in terms of accessing those supports, is there any kind of one-stop shop for guys like yourselves who are effectively volunteers doing stuff on top of a full-time job?
Well, I can tell you from the past 6 years, no, there isn't. And it's a hard graft. There's a lot of work. There's a lot of pressure on our own work here in the building, because I'd say we're dedicating a third of our own time to this project, which is well worth it. But I can see why communities don't or aren't encouraged to make an effort. You know, it's a very tedious, laborious process. And as Noel said, you feel the weight of responsibility. You know, if you're a director in a company, there's financial implications. You know, it's very hard to take on something this big.
And that was Raig Tighe ending that report. And my thanks to everyone now who spoke to me in Ballycastle earlier this week when I was there. Now, still with me are Robert Troy, Fianna Fáil Minister of State, Rose Conway Walsh, who's Sinn Féin TD for Mayo, and Conor Sheehan, who's Labour TD for Limerick City. Conor Sheehan, your party spokesperson on housing. So some of the issues there, balancing, I suppose, the environmental demands and also the population demands in a particular area, trying to get people back in. Has the Labour Party come up with a way to square that circle?
Well, I suppose the first thing I'd say is that we really badly need new rural housing guidelines. They haven't been updated since 2005. My understanding was last summer that the Attorney General was reviewing the draft guidelines. And in my view, what we need to do in terms of rural housing is we need to have incentives for people to actually live in the communities where they are from. I know there's so many friends of mine who come from places, you know, 15, 20 minutes out from Limerick City, for example, my own constituency, and they are not able to, they're not able to buy, they're not even able to acquire, say, a derelict property even at an adequate price anymore in order to avail of the Croí Cónaithe scheme in order to address these issues. I think there needs to be much more of an emphasis placed by government on cluster housing in particular.
And does that mean you're against one-off housing in rural Ireland?
In my own view, I think what we need to do in terms of, I don't think you can simply say that you can have a blanket ban on one-off housing, because I don't think that will work. But what I think we need to do is we need to wean the country off of one-off housing. And in my view, the best way to do that is to incentivise, for example, service sites and cluster housing to make it financially attractive for people to buy and to build in those circumstances, so that they'll be able to build or they'll be able to buy a property in the community where they're from.
Okay, Robert Troy, a number of issues raised there in the package and by Conor Sheehan, but let's start with the planning. The rural housing guidelines have been awaited for years. The current guidelines are 20 years old. They're supposed to be updated, and so far no sign of them. So when are they due to be published?
My understanding is they're due to be published later this year, and I would hope that target won't be missed. But what I would say is, like, each county has their own local county development plan, which is a plan unique to their individual county, which is updated by the local members every 5 years, and which within that section has guidelines and criteria in terms of what's needed to support one-off housing or service sites or unserviced sites. I know in my own county of Westmead, we have a policy in place in relation to supporting people who meet local need to build in their own locality. We have service sites going to be proposed in a new Mullingar town plan, which will support service sites within a town framework where people can buy a site that's serviced and build their own home. And we have a number of hamlets across the county where people, the sites are unserviced, but you don't need to meet local need in that area.
One of the commitments made by the Taoiseach, the now Taoiseach Micheál Martin, prior to the last general election in November, was that sons and daughters of farmers would be entitled under the new guidelines to build on their own land. I mean, is that policy, or is that guaranteed to be in the guidelines when they come out, do you know?
Well, I haven't seen them, but that is policy in Westmead, a county development plan that I know well. And each county has their own plan. In Westmead, a son or daughter, actually two children from the farming family, has a right to build a home on that land. Now, sometimes what happens is it may not always be the most the site that the son or daughter wants the most, or it may not always be the design that the son or daughter wants the most. And sometimes that's where there's a disagreement between the planning authority and the applicant.
All
but
right.
I have to say, my experience in Westmead, and I've been very parochial here, is that it is quite supportive of people who have a local need to build in that locality. But you are right, and I do accept, we do need to see the National Rural Housing Guidelines published, and I would be hoping and expect that will happen later this year.
Rose Conway-Walsh, you live in the constituency where Ballycastle is. The issue, as it's identified by the people I spoke to when I was there, is the difficulty with people who want to move back home being able to get housing either in the town itself or nearby.
Yeah, and firstly, I want to thank you for going to Ballycastle. You'll see what a beautiful place it is, and all along the coast there, Colm. I was one of those returning immigrants myself, like Noel was and his brilliant team there, who are working on the Eco Campus and doing huge work in the community. And absolutely, housing is like... To hear the talk and the talks is coming from government, you'd never think that we were in the middle of a housing emergency. So for a start, there isn't enough housing for people who want to live in the area, never mind to bring back the people that we need to bring back to the area. And one of the reasons is around Ballycastle and around the North Mayo area, there has been huge designations there over the years, going back to 1997 to the Habitats Directive. So we have SAC, we have NHAs, we have SBA is and all of that. And the designations, firstly, the what was promised to landowners at the time never came to fruition. But this is now conspiring to stop people from building on their own land.
So are you talking about de-designation?
No, what I'm talking about is there being flexibility. Planning has to be about people. And when there's no houses for people to live in, there has to be a flexibility in the interpretation of the plans as well. And sometimes what you find is an inconsistency there. So people don't, you know, one decision will be made in one way. Like the woman rightly pointed out there, you have 185 meter turbines built, and somebody can't build a modest home on their own land as well. So that has to stop. There has to be changes to planning to enable that to be done, because people don't have homes, then they don't have anything else.
Right.
But that has a knock-on effect, obviously, on the areas there as well, and what people talked about there.
Okay. Conor Sheehan, yeah, you wanted to come in on that, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose, look, while we might have individual differences on aspects of policy, I think we can all agree that the rural planning process in particular is tortuous. It is unbelievably complicated. It's very, very hard. People have to jump through hoops. And I think if you're talking as well about local development plans, it's really important to remember that an awful lot of that is set down in the framework that's laid out by the planning regulator. So I did a development plan. I was a member of the local authority until December. There were councillors from rural areas who tried to put in particular variations in terms of rural housing in order to incentivise rural housing. That development plan then went off to the planning regulator in Dublin. The planning regulator recommended rejecting the amendments. It then went to the minister. The minister very rarely contradicts the planning regulator, and the previous housing minister didn't. And
But are there grounds for the planning regulator to reject that? Look at the aftermath of Storm Éowyn, where it took a long time to reconnect houses that were in remote areas that, you know, may have been built on family land, but the ability to service them with infrastructure, with power, with all of those other things, maybe that's what the planning regulator is taking into account.
Yes, and I accept that point fully, and that's why I'm saying that what we need to have is much more carrot in terms of cluster housing, because an awful lot of policy when it comes to rural housing, you know, from somebody who's in their early 30s, many of my friends and family members have been through this process whereby it almost seems like you come up against a brick wall at every juncture. You can't do this, you can't do this, you can't build there. But what we actually need to see is we need to see more incentives for people to build in rural areas in a sustainable fashion. And I really do believe that there is a happy medium that can be found here.
All right, Robert Troy, the National Planning Framework was published 10 days ago, but there's nothing really new in that when it comes to rural housing. Where are the new ideas?
Well, as I said, look, we're expecting new rural housing guidelines to be published later on this year, and I'm sure that'll give guidance. But my own experience in Westmeath is that where people meet the criteria, people are facilitated to build their own home. And a matter of fact, statistics bear that out nationally, because 20% of all houses built between 2020 and 2024 are actually rural houses. So it's factually wrong to say that people aren't getting permission to build on their own land. And in terms of what supports are there to help repopulate areas that are in population decline, we have up to 100,000 when you include the SAI grants alongside the derelict property grants to support people to go into old cottages that have become
you'll accept
run down.
The people in Ballycastle who spoke to me, they're not making it up. There is a real difficulty with attracting people back.
I fully take on board what your contributors said today, but what they're actually saying is they have become a victim of their own success. They have attracted so many people back. There doesn't appear to be any vacant properties that are left there because people want to come back. And that's what I suppose the benefit of COVID is, that we have been able to demonstrate that you have a quality of life living in rural Ireland by still being able to work for people in the international sector and the national sector. And that's why, as a government, we have opened up over 400 remote working hubs to support people who want to work in the rural areas, whose jobs are still linked into large urban areas.
All right, I suppose, in fairness, that is a hub, and they're saying that people can't get accommodation or housing beside it. We're going to stay with the issue of the impact of rural depopulation on social amenities. We're going to specifically the case of the GAA, but we have to take a quick break. We're back in a minute on that.
Saturday with Conor Mungon on RTE Radio 1.